G'day, folks. Welcome to Pause and Listen, a podcast series brought to you by Big Dog Pet Foods, the leading pet nutrition provider in Australia with over 20 years of experience in the pet industry. We provide educational resources for pet parents and are proud of being transparent in everything we do. The podcast series is hosted by me, Johnny Manning, and we bring you interviews and deep dives into pet nutrition, pet care, training, and regular Ask a Vet segments. So thanks for tuning in. Now get your tails wagging and we'll get yapping. G'day, pet owners, fur parents and lovers of all creatures great and small. Welcome to Pause and Listen. What we're doing here is a Big Dog Pet Foods podcast, and it's a place for you to come to find out all manner of pet-related information. My name's Johnny Manning. I'm your host for today and for pretty much every other episode of Pause and Listen. And I have a wonderful guest who I love talking to, my old friend, owner of Mont Albert Vet Surgery in Melbourne, founder of Shy Tiger, the absolutely spectacular, fantastic, stunning and lovely Dr. Nicole Rouse. Good evening, good day, good morrow, Dr. Nick.
Good evening, Tony. I feel so touched that you call me an old friend. I feel like that's really part of the Big Dog family now, aren't I? I've made the leap. Without a doubt,
you're one of us. Dr. Nick,
I know,
don't worry about that.
We're setting the emotional scene for this topic. I think, you know, I feel like this topic we're talking about tonight, you and I were quite passionate about having a discussion about this. So it's a bit of a tough one, isn't it? Pull on the heartstrings.
Yeah, it is. And at the risk of sounding indulgent, this has certainly got a personal flavour for me. But if that's the case, then there has to be other people out there who are in the same shoes that I'm in. So hopefully this is going to help people every bit as much as it's going to help me, because it's something I deal with, I feel, on a daily basis, and it's something that I'm trying to wrap my head around. I'm trying to navigate these really stormy waters of cognitive decline in our pets. Mm-hmm. And for me specifically, it's with my dog. And, you know, to be honest, I need some help. So if you can help me, Dr. Nick, you're going to help a stack of other people out there, I've got absolutely no doubt.
Absolutely. I think it's so common. I mean, we'll go through the statistics and things. It's incredibly common. It's relevant to cats and dogs. It impacts your day-to-day life, your relationship with your pet. And I think one of the hardest things with it is that it's so, especially in the dogs, it's so well correlated with Alzheimer's disease, which is also so prevalent in the human population. It really tugs at the heartstrings because it affects you on, you know, the human level, the pet level, everything. It's a really tough one, but it's a really good topic to talk about because I think there's some really good practical steps that we can take as pet parents and as vets to help the pets that may reduce the progress, may prevent it. So, yeah, no, there's lots of things we can do. So it'll be a great chat.
Yeah, and you don't have to kick over too many stones to find a person who is directly impacted by Alzheimer's or dementia or whatever, you know, that may be. And I read something recently that they're using and it's either Alzheimer's or dementias is the overarching term for that kind of condition in people. And then you drill into it and there's a few, you know, subsections, subcategories and things like that. So with that being the comment I come back with, Dr. Nick, let's define this particular problem in our pets. What is cognitive decline? When does it start? How do you recognize it? Tell me what I need to know.
Yeah, it's a really interesting sort of definition, isn't it? Because I guess cognitive decline is a decline in cognitive function. And cognitive function is our ability to perceive things, for awareness, for learning, for memory. And it's our ability to, I guess, navigate the world, isn't it? To perceive the information that we're presented with every day, process it, and then create behaviours or navigate our way through that day based on that information we're getting. So it's any decline in that. And that's whether you're a human or a pet. And the way we define it in the pet space is around an acronym they actually use. So not everyone's familiar with this acronym, but it's an acronym we use to define the problem, and it's called DISHA. So D-I-S-H-A-A. And basically, it's the pillars of DISHA that will help pet parents to define the problem. So D stands for disorientation, I for social interaction, S for sleep wave cycles, which is the one that drives everyone batty, I think. H is for house oiling. Again, another challenging one, learning and memory. A for activity, which is the really sad one. I think that's quite challenging, seeing them become quite, you know, really low with activity levels. And then A for anxiety, which is one not everyone realizes is cognitive dysfunction. But we'll go into that. So based on those things, and you can Google this, we might put it in the show notes actually if they're happy to, you basically can get a score for your pet of all these different conditions, and they'll ask you like a little question around each of those DISHA acronym terms, and you'll either go 3, severe, 2, moderate, 1, mild, or 0, none, and your number will then correlate with whether your pet doesn't have cognitive dysfunction, has it mild, moderate, or severe. And they're based on it over the age of 8. So I don't know if you've ever done that with your dog or whether you even knew it was a thing, because there's no like blood test or anything to diagnose cognitive dysfunction, is there? It's essentially a questionnaire, a score-based questionnaire.
That's new information to me, which is magnificent. Yeah. I love coming on here and getting new information. And I'm glad you said it was a score, because I'm sitting there as you're going through those letters and I'm like, okay, yes, yes, no, yes. You know, Frank doesn't have all of those things, but he might have some of them on a macro level or on a severe level, which then bumps the score up to means, well, you know, he's not soiling the house at all, which is great, but then some of the other things he may have. The other thing that I wrote down when you're going through that is honesty. It's so important to be completely detached from emotion and honest when you're going through that checklist with your vet and answering those questions. Oh, well, he's really not that, you know, his activity's really actually pretty good, or yeah, he socializes with other dogs when he's around, but when really they're not, you know what I mean? So for me, I was like, man, I'd probably lie to come home and tell Frank, no, Frank, you're fine. You don't have this, you know.
I feel like I can lie on my patient's behalf as well. Like I feel like it's even as a vet, it's so heartbreaking acknowledging with pet parents that their pets are on this path, and you kind of finding all the excuses. They're like, oh, you know, so for one of the classic examples is they get a bit more anxious and a little bit more jittery, you know, and they become just a bit more reactive and just a bit more jittery. And it's always like, oh, well, the neighbours have been doing a lot of gardening lately and there's a renovation down the road and, you know, my granddaughter's been coming over a lot. You know, that like, yeah, he was really joining in that.
He was really upset about the cricket score, you know, that made him anxious.
Yeah, but I feel like I like buy into that as well. I'd be like, oh, well, let's just see how they are in a month and we'll, you know, Or the other thing that can play an influence, and this is legit, and I had one of my clients recently experiencing this, is that the dog had an upset tummy. So it started wandering around at night, and then the poor client was so stressed that the dog had this sudden deterioration of cognitive dysfunction. But the poor dog was just uncomfortable. And I did say to her, look, this is sudden. So this is good advice for people. If it's sudden, don't panic. Just stop and reassess. But if this is a gradual change over time, it's not the renovation down the road. I wish it was, but it's the reality of it. And I think it'd be really interesting. So I think for me as a vet, I talk about this every day in clinic because it's so, so common. The stats are that 30% of cats and dogs over the age of 11 have cognitive dysfunction. So a third of cats over the age of 11.
Your washing's done.
Oh, no, my dishwasher. Yeah. Sorry. Long to it.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I get this the exact same tune at home. So that was the question I was going to ask, was around the age. So you said 6 or 7. That is so young.
So 30% of pets over the age of 11 have it.
Oh, 11.
But you can get it. You can get it as early as it can. I mean, look, probably about 7 or 8 is about the earliest I've seen. 7 or 8. Yeah.
Okay, so when I was reading the lovely notes you put together, so 6 or 7 in large breeds over, say, 10 or 11 in small breeds. Right, get it. How much truth is there in the dog years? Equation 7 to 1, because I'm looking at that and I'm like, well, that kind of makes sense, if you're looking at that 7 to 1. So do we put any credence in that equation?
Yeah, there's definitely not a linear equation. So it's definitely not year 1 is 7, year 2 is 14, year 3 is 21. The research I read a while ago, because I was doing a TikTok on it, I think, is the first 2 to 3 years is like you're sort of going really quick. So the first couple of years, you're like 20, and then it slows down to the 7 to 1 for a long time, and then it drops back a little bit. So by the time you get to the 10, 12 years, you are sort of like 70, but absolutely large breed dogs age faster than small breed dogs. So if you're talking about cognitive decline, you can see it from 7 to 8 in the large breed, and you can see it probably from 10 realistically in the small breed dogs.
Any breeds more susceptible versus the others to this?
Yeah, I didn't find a conclusive study that really showed the answer black and white. I feel like in clinic, I feel like I definitely see it in the small breed dogs more than large breed. It's really interesting. So I feel like I see it in Jack Russells and I'm probably going to get caned for this, but small white fluffy dogs, there's a lot of breeds that play into that, but they're probably the most prevalent breeds in my 15 years as a vet that I would say. I see it a little bit in German Shepherds and breeds like that, if you're talking about the larger breed dogs. But I don't know. I guess for me, a lot of the larger breed dogs' problems generally come down to body and joint over their brain.
They mightn't get that far, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's the chicken and egg sort of scenario, isn't it?
Yeah. Those breeds you spoke of tend to live longer than the large breed dogs.
They do, and I guess when we go into it a bit more, I'm also curious that the larger breed dogs perhaps, maybe they're not as fussy with their food, so maybe they have maybe a more varied gut biome, maybe that decelerates the process. We've got some evidence now. They did this amazing study where they got basically the gut biome from human Alzheimer's patients and put it into mice, and the mice developed Alzheimer's, memory loops. It's scary. I feel like every podcast we mention the gut biome. It's so scary, isn't it? But amazing.
But it's scary, but amazing and like, almost, it's so scientific, but it almost defies science.
Yeah,
that gut biome, but also that mind-gut link. It's almost
absolutely
too sophisticated for science to explain, which is so peculiar.
Yeah, and we're just grappling with it the last sort of 10 years, really, aren't we? I mean, the human world's known about it for a bit longer, but all the studies in the pet, the animal world are just catching up. It's just fascinating the role we have, especially, Big Dog 23 years ago, they knew the benefits of fresh feeding when they started. But just, the fact that we've been feeding pets kibble for so long, and it's just like I feel like hitting your head up against a wall.
Yeah, but the beauty the beauty of it is that we're finding out all these supplementary benefits of raw and fresh feeding that we maybe didn't know back then. So that's an amazing benefit, but it's also all the more reason to get your animal on that raw and fresh diet as soon as possible, just so you can see the benefits that we know about, but in 5 years' time there could be a bunch of benefits that we didn't even realise existed, which is great.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, now So that's the breed question. So the next question was going to be cats versus dogs.
Yeah. So the dog model of cognitive dysfunction is almost identical to human Alzheimer's. Cats are not that far off. They're pretty similar. Like, have you ever heard of the people talking about how you get that beta amyloid deposit, like the protein deposit in the brain with Alzheimer's? Yes. So dogs get that, but cats get that as well. And I sort of think of that. So beta amyloid is a protein. It's kind of made by the nerve cells. And I sort of think of it as the brain's version of your carotid artery getting blocked up and predisposing you to a heart attack. Do you know what I mean?
Right,
so you know how we think of that, that carotid artery is, and you get the atherosclerosis, the plaque build up in your aorta, and that predisposes you to a heart attack. Well, getting the amyloid, they turn into plaques as well. And they like almost suffocate the nerve cells in the brain and stop the brain cells from working. So it's like it's the brain version of the heart attack. And people are a lot more familiar with the heart attack aorta situation. So that's kind of how I think of it. But the cats and the dogs do both get it. The prevalence is very similar with cats and dogs with cognitive dysfunction. But the exact physiology of the dogs is a bit more specific. And we don't need to go into all the nitty-gritties. I don't even understand all the nitty-gritties of it. It's very detailed and it's not that relevant. But, it's really interesting that both cats and dogs do get it. I think for me with the cats, the thing that I see is, and the thing that's really challenging for pet owners, is they tend to get more of the sleep-wake disturbances. So when the cats really ramp up with a cognitive dysfunction, they're like walking through the night and screaming and crying and keeping everyone in the house awake, and it's really challenging. They're missing the litter tray. And then there's lots of other reasons they could be doing this, arthritis, thyroid disease, all this kind of other stuff. But no doubt there's a role of the cognitive dysfunction in there as well. And it's really challenging for cat owners, really, really challenging.
Yeah. My God. Okay. So that's the cat and dog, I guess, question. So let's talk about diagnosis. Now, that DISHA model, D-I-S-H-A-A.
Yes.
Can we apply that at home to an extent? Is that if we feel as though our pet is, that's, our pet's getting of age and their behavior's actually changed a bit, do we then sit there for, a couple of weeks and just do a little mental DISHA sort of score ourselves and then get to the point, actually, you know what, I need to go to the vet and get this DISHA score done properly and then understand what's wrong? What I'm trying to ask is around the indicators at home and how we manage that at home before we get to the vet.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, the owners, you're going to do a better job of the DISHA than the vet is, because your pet. So you're taking your results to your vet to basically say, help me, what can we do to slow down this process? What can I do to improve the quality of life? Where are we at? In a perfect world, every pet owner that had a pet over the age of 8 would do the DISHA maybe every 3 to 6 months and keep track of it. That would be the perfect kind of scenario, but it's uncommon. But certainly if you have any suspicion of cognitive decline in your pet, I think do the DISHA. And again, we'll do it in the show notes. If you're getting severe in any category, I'd go to your vet. If you're just getting mild to moderate, then I'd probably, as you say, do it, repeat it in a month, see where you're at, and then go to your vet with that kind of process.
All right, we're about to do I reckon this is going to be a world first. What you and I are about to do. We're going to do a live to air. We're going to do a live to air. We're going to do a DISHA right now for my boy Frank. So you're going to ask me the question. You're going to ask me the questions through that DISHA, and then we'll score it. I've got Frank's. Frank has signed a waiver to say I'm authorized to speak on his behalf. So that might be an answer to one of the first ones.
Yeah. Okay, ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, I can do it quiet. It's not very long. There's, I think, gosh, now we Let's see. I was clearly very prepared for this. All right.
Well, I was going to say, if you're listening, I've just pulled this on Dr. Nick. We had no planning to do this before. I've just tossed it on you.
Just in case anyone really listens to us, look, we do write notes a little bit, but it's not premeditated and we don't even really edit it. So it's very authentic.
Yeah. What you see is what you get.
Okay. So number one is they've gone with social interactions. So basically identify the signs that have arisen or progressed since 8 years of age and older. So that you've got to, like, if your dog's always been irritable, you can't then give it severe and irritable and it counts. Do you know what I mean? It's got to be something that's changed. So more irritable, fearful, aggressive with visitors, family or other animals. Zero, none, one mild, two moderate or three severe.
No, like I would say absolutely moderate, if anything, on that. Because Frank's always had an aloofness about him and he still has that when approached by other dogs. But has it changed? I don't think so, no.
Okay, so that's a zero then because you've had no change. Okay,
I don't think so, yeah.
Yep, good. So decreased interest in approaching, greeting or affection petting.
Yeah, I would say some change.
Mild or moderate?
I'm going to say mild.
Okay, good one. Now, for sleep-wake cycles, pacing, restless sleep, less waking at night.
Yeah, so that is moderate. However, the caveat to that is if he is up during the night, it's usually to go to the toilet.
Okay. We'll go with mild.
There's been a mild change.
Okay. All right. We've got a one. Vocalization at night?
Yeah, that's gone up. I would say that is severe. And that's not so much during the night. That's almost all the time. He has become so much more vocal. So that is the severe part of it.
Yeah, that's a challenging part. Yes, and sometimes a lot of people will say to me, is that to do with hearing loss too with age? Sometimes they're like become more vocal with that, so it can be related. Now, with regards to house soiling, learning and memory, less able to learn new tasks or respond to previously learned commands, name or work.
No, I don't think there's been any change. I challenge him less as he's gotten old. Yep. You know, I don't ask him to.
But he still responds?
Yeah, but he doesn't soil inside the house at all. Like that's not, he'll sit at the door and tap it and bark before, to make us come and open it. So that's fine.
And he hasn't, like if you had taught him something in the past, he hasn't forgotten how to do that?
I don't think so. Because he's a bulldog and he's stubborn, he'll do it, but grip begrudge. Yeah. If I ask him to shake hands, he'll do it, but it just doesn't have the same gusto that it used to.
Yeah.
I'm not lying on his behalf, I promise you.
No, he's manipulating the situation. And so no soiling in the house, so you're good with that?
No.
Good. Good. And do you ever have and this can't be bulldog stubbornness, this has to be aging. Difficulty getting dogs' attention, increased distraction, decreased focus.
Yeah, that's up top end of that, absolutely. Yeah.
Three, so that's severe?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Now, activity, decrease in exploration or play with toys, family members and other pets. This is a hard one because I think some of this, you just like got less energy when you get older.
So I'm going to say no change and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because when I come home from work, he will be on the deck waiting for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I come home, he'll spring to life, trot inside, grab a toy and make me play with it, right? Now, does he do it 24/7 the way he used to do? No. But to me, I'm comfortable with that. I'm happy to give that a zero. He
When he's on. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. And he's still interested in it.
Increased
activity, including aimless pacing or wandering. This is an interesting one. I do see this in some pets. No? There you go.
Zero.
That's a good one because that's highly irritating at night when you hear the nails going down the hallway.
Sweet. Yeah, but I mean, that's part of the previous one about the sleep one, yeah.
Yeah. You know when, and people like will get this as well. When you walk into a room and you like forget why you were there, and then you walk out again. Like sometimes the dogs do that too.
Hang on. What are we? Oh, Dr. Nick, completely forgot what we were
doing. Now, any repetitive behaviors, circling, chewing, licking, stargazing.
Yeah, there's a little bit of like, you know, in the morning he sort of does the licking a fair bit. But
not allergy based?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think it's any more than what he did, to be fair, if I'm to.
Okay, so zero probably.
He doesn't. He does. When you say stargazing, what do you mean by that?
They just like looking to blank, like just looking to vacant space, looking at the stars, and just like
you know going, what? No, to be fair, I'll give him a mild on that.
Give him a mild increase.
Yeah. Just to be on the safe side, because he does do that, and I know he can't see as well as he used to. So
yeah. Now, anxiety, increased anxiety when separated from owners. This, for me, is a classic early warning sign we excuse.
Yeah, I reckon that's increased.
Yeah. Mild or moderate?
I'll give it a moderate.
Two?
Yeah. Yeah.
I reckon it's an under-recognized one, I have to say, because really
common. Sarah will say to me, oh, he was a real handful when you weren't here, you know?
Yeah, so heartbreaking, isn't it? More reactive or fearful to visual, so sights or auditory sound stimuli.
No, zero.
Okay. Increased fear of places or locations, for example, new environments, going outdoors. So if you were going on to a walk in a different place, would he be like really like looking around really uncomfortable?
No, he's an adventurer. He's an explorer. He's cool. Yeah, in that situation, no, he's fine.
All right, you're done.
Okay.
You ready for your score? You gotta do a drum roll. Thank you.
Enough. That's the drum roll we needed.
Oh, no, eight. What are we? 3, 4, 5, 8, 10, 11. So you're What's sitting 11? In mild.
Okay.
Between 4 to 15 is consistent with mild.
Okay.
That's
kind of where I thought he might be. I thought he might be a little bit worse than that, but mild.
And I guess from answering those questions, you've kind of now in the back of your mind, you've seen what some red flags are.
Yeah.
So it's information's power, isn't it? It's a bit confronting to really acknowledge that. And I guess you can chat to your vet about that. You know, you've done the DSHR. I'm not 100% sure, I have to be honest, that all vets know about DSHR.
No, that's okay. But I'm sure they'll have their own sort of model that they'll use, you know,
which
probably apply similar principles. And you're right. It is confronting. But what you just said about information being power is more overwhelming than being confronted, because now I know I've got a starting point. Now I have those tools to know what to look for. And to me, I feel so much better after actually doing that.
Good.
And granted, he didn't have a score where you said, oh my God, it's severe. He's, you know, off his rocker, which is great.
Yeah.
But it's also, I feel equipped now. And previously, and this would be the same with so many people out there, they're flying blind in this situation.
Yeah.
They're sort of fumbling around in the dark trying to understand, as you said, oh, well, is that because his eyes are no good or his ears are no good or is that, as you said, the reno next door or whatever it may be? You remove those factors and just focus in on, okay, be honest and answer these questions with regards to what they were like when they were 8 years old.
Yeah.
Then you get to a true read, and that's a good place to be at. And, you know, if it was double, if it was 22, I'd be like, oh my God. But,
But you'd still have be equipped with that and be like, okay, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
I need to do something. What can we? Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's all quality of life. So I guess then we get to what can we do?
Well, wonderful segue.
You've gone through, we've gone again and again in this podcast, and basically you know that the risk factor is age, isn't it? It really is. There's only one major risk factor. It's age. It's not black and white with breed. We know cats and dogs are both affected. age is the biggest risk factor. So as your pet gets older, they are more prone to getting cognitive dysfunction. So if we have a, you're going to have pet parents in two camps here. One are pet parents where their pets aren't eight and they're so paranoid and concerned about this happening, they want to do anything and everything they can to, you know, mitigate any risk possible. So, you know, supplements, preventatives, what can we do? And then you're going to have the other camp where, you know, like you, maybe we're showing mild signs or even up to severe signs, and what can we do to try and slow it down, really? So there's a few things that actually have research behind them, which is great. It's not all doom and gloom. It's not just let nature take its course and it is what it is. There's actually things we can genuinely do. And first of all, we've already covered a little bit of it, and that's absolutely diet. Without a doubt, they've shown it time and time again that nutrition has a huge role, gut biome has a huge role. So I would say any pet full stop, but any pet with that, you know, pet parent that wants to reduce the risk of cognitive decline or pet with cognitive decline, get them onto some fresh food. If it's a slow process and you're stressed about it, start with a few things. Get a tin of sardines, chuck an egg in, get a bit of yogurt and add some probiotics. So start with it, get that gut biome working for your pet if you're worried about just launching into fresh food. Because I get that can be daunting, but go slow and get there. Make it a goal.
That probiotic's critical, isn't it?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
100%.
All right,
and
so
I'm sure
diet.
Yep, diet and probiotics. And I actually have been dabbling in the new one, and this is not a spiel or anything, but Big Dog have launched their new probiotic range. So they've got that stress and anxiety one. So we've got brain probiotics, which is great. It's amazing. We're learning more about what role the different strains have. It's not just let's have probiotics. It's not just this blanket. It's more of a targeted approach now, which is really exciting.
I had a chat with Chris and one of the probiotics suppliers a few weeks ago. And as I said to you before, that I feel like we're just scratching the surface on that situation, you know. So, I think the key is to get on board with it right now and you'll see those results that you didn't even know were there, which is amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So definitely start with diet, start with good probiotics, get onto that fresh food. And I guess we'll go into supplements because that's probably the next sort of, you've got your probiotics. What other supplements can you do? We know everyone's heard that omega-3, your fatty acids, they're good for your brain. We know lots of people have heard of EPA and DHA for growing brains, but they're also really good for older brains. So your fish oil.
Yeah.
You want really good quality fish oil. So either you're providing a fish base in your diet, so either salmon or mussel or oysters and things like that. I'll often get pet parents to, even at the supermarket, get tinned oysters or sardines in spring water and throw them in. That's really good. Probably my favourite omega supplement for the brain is your antinol. I don't know if you're familiar with antinol as well. It's a modified green mussel, great Australian brand as well. So we love that one. But, there are lots of omega-3 supplements on the market. The main thing I would say with omega-3 is always include some food-based sources because I think that's really nice. So get your salmon, get your mussels and any other sort of sardine or fish that your pet will eat. Don't give them tins of tuna every day. Don't stick to the heavy metal laden fish order every day. And keep your omega-3 supplements if you're using them fresh. So don't leave a bottle of fish oil open in the cupboard for 3 months and think that you're doing a good job because you actually do more harm than good. Fish oil goes rancid. So a good quality omega supplement.
Yeah.
And then one, do you know there was a supplement that I actually learned about doing research in this that I didn't even know about? So excuse me for new knowledge here. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to pronounce it, but it has good research. All right, I'll give it a go. This is embarrassing.
Yeah, you are human. You're just like the rest of us mere mortals, Dr. Nick.
Phosphatidylserine. Oh, my God. How do you pronounce this? Phosphatidylserine. Do you know it? Have you heard of it?
Phosphatidylserine.
Anyway, phosphatidyl serine. People are just going to, there'd be vets listening to this video, rolling their eyes, surely, probably. we don't know everything. Guess what? Vets don't know everything.
I'm just messing with you.
It is a phospholipid that protects brain cells, and actually it's good research. So I had a little Google, and you can just get it online, supplements. Right. But basically what you're trying to do with cognitive decline is you're trying to protect the nerves, the brain cells from being destroyed and dying off, aren't you? So anything that's going to cushion them, support them, and stop the beta, you know, the amyloid plaques developing. So just support that nerve function. So the phosphatidyl, I don't know why I keep wanting to say it, but I'll put it in the show notes. Your omega-3s, and we always talk about antioxidants, you know, with humans, who always,
of course,
I know lots of people in skincare, antioxidants. And basically any organ, whether it's your brain, your liver, your lungs, whatever, whenever it's trying to function, in its day-to-day function, it creates like byproducts and inflammation. If that's not all cleaned up, you get like toxic byproducts. Your antioxidants are like scavengers. They help clean up. They're like a garbage removal. So the more antioxidants you have in any organ, the better it's going to function. So there's antioxidants and things in food. So that's why we like fresh food. That's why we don't like rancid food, because that's really bad. But there's all different. So good antioxidants in your food, good omega-3, that thing that I can't tell you what it's called. SAMe's another one that people – I'm getting all the names here, and that's S-adenosylmethionine. We all call it SAMe because no one can actually pronounce it.
SAMe works for me.
SAMe works, and that basically helps nerve health as well. So again, nerve function, we're coming back to it. Nerve function, brain cell, protect everything, clean up metabolism. Medium chain triglycerides. So your good old coconut oil actually has a role in all this, which is pretty cool. That just helps your brain cells function more efficiently. So again, back to being efficient. And the other one that I didn't realize had some evidence is ginkgo biloba, which is, so there's a few other herbs that you know, probably help, whether you've got, you know, double blinded controlled studies on all this, probably not. But when you've got a pet that is experiencing this and the herbs don't have any side effects, why not give it a go? Like, we can't wait for double blinded controlled studies on everything. So
no, and that's what I was going to say. All of those supplements and you know, additions to the diet you just spoke about, they're not going to damage your animal.
No.
So
exactly.
you might as well give them a crack, you know.
Yeah, and I think whenever you're – my sort of general advice on supplements is give it a go for at least 2 months, if not 3 months. Don't just give it a go for 2 weeks and be like, nah, not working. Supplements take time. So give everything a go for 2 to 3 months, unless you're seeing side effects stop, and then draw a conclusion whether you think it's right. Don't blindly give supplements for years just hoping they're doing something. Definitely critique what you're doing, but give them a chance to work. Don't just stop them. Don't just stop them suddenly, because they take a long time. They're not like an antibiotic, which works straight away.
Yeah, okay. All right. So
you've got a few bits and pieces to try.
Yeah, definitely. So that's a pretty broad spectrum and an amazing array of weapons that you can assist your dog to consume. Yeah. So what about external treatments and things like that? I mean,
yeah.
Diet's one thing. What else is there?
Yeah, perfect. So the saying with humans, if you know, use it or lose it kind of thing, I think that holds true with our pets as well. So, you know, mental enrichment is so important with our pets, with just general quality of life, but also with cognitive decline. So we need to keep challenging their brains. We need to keep getting them to learn and keep forcing those neural pathways in their brain to keep being plastic and working and developing, and not just let them. I know it looks like they're so comfortable sleeping in the corner and doing nothing for 23 and a half hours a day, but by challenging their brain, it will keep it working and being plastic. And, you know, we know that they can adapt and learn new things. So if it's as simple as putting their dinner in a snuffle mat rather than a bowl, so they have to explore it and do it, if you can take them into the backyard and hide some treats rather than just, you know, they're simple things that they will enjoy, but they're using their brain, which helps. So, and I think, yeah, I mean, do you do anything like that? Have you found anything like that useful?
Yeah, we call it.
You're smiling, his, so I can tell you've got a story.
We call it his treasure hunt. We give him a little treasure hunt, and we break up little treats and put them around in the backyard or even on the back deck. And he goes out and hunts for them, and we'll sit there and watch him. And if he misses one, we're like, oh, you missed one, buddy. You got to go back and find that one. And he'll go, he'll start doing laps and going back on his path that he's been, and he'll end up finding it, or I'll kick it in front of him just so he finds
it.
And we'll give him a big cheer and tell him that he's the smartest
boy ever.
Oh, that's
so cute.
So,
and
yeah,
it's so simple, isn't it? Because you could not do that, couldn't you? Like, it'd be just as easy to just not do that. But that's so good for him, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's on Sarah. She takes great care of him in that sense. The treasure hunt was her idea, you know, way back when. And you know, it's a regular thing now. And sometimes he'll demand the treasure hunt. He'll go stand where he starts and demand it, which is really cool. And that means
he has a starting point, does he?
Yeah, well, there's a general starting point that he can't cross that line until we tell him to go. No, which means that he's learning as well, right? That actually means that he's okay. He's retaining that information, which is kind of cool as well. So, but I think, you know, I think when you said that, did you just call it a stuffle bag or a stifle bag? What's that?
Snuffle mat. Have you heard of that?
No.
They're basically this mat, and lots of people. Like, people make them, like craft them, but you can also buy them. And they basically have bits of material or, I guess they call it plastic, and you hide food in them.
Yeah.
And so they have to like snuffle to get their food rather than just being in a bowl. So, and you tend to just wash them. So, if you Google snuffle, mate, you'll find one.
And the other thing that we got for him is he's with his soft toys, there was like a barn. Which had like, you know, little soft animals stuck inside it. So he gets the barn and goes around and tries to pull the animals out of it, you know. And then the barn's a soft toy on its own, but then it's got other little ones inside it as well. So that's cool. Well, at least we're doing something.
Yeah.
Right, which is
I think that's really good. And also, like, some dogs actually like playing hide and seek in the house, which is really cute.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's really cute. My kids will sometimes play that with the dogs. I think you've got to be a bit of a kid at heart sometimes with your pets, don't you? And go back to doing fun things. Another really easy one is just changing the way you walk around the block. Like, don't just go the same way every day. Like, that's good for us and them because they love that whole sniffari. You know, we talk about sending them on a sniffari. It's good. All that sniffing is just as important as the exercise, if not more important. So just changing it up a little bit, all these things will add so much value to any dog's quality of life, let alone a dog that's going through any sort of cognitive decline. I probably am guilty of not doing that enough. Like, I feel like sometimes the walk is ticking a box in a way, but it's my dogs are only 2 and 4, but still it's, you know, it does change how much they get out of their day.
Yeah. What about like a slow feeding mat or something like that, or a slow feeding bowl where it's sort of, they have to work for their food, you know?
Yeah. I think anything where they're working for their food, and also if they can tolerate it, raw meaty bones, because they're really enjoying that as well. So any way that they can enjoy and slow down their food and use their brain when they're feeding, that's huge. Some dogs, as they get older, their teeth become a bit more brittle, so you may have to go for slightly softer bones than when they were younger. So you just have to adapt to what they and I guess if they're quite advanced in the cognitive decline, they might not have the attention span to chew for a long period of time, but it's still something, isn't it? So.
Chewing bones is good for them anyway. So,
absolutely.
Anything where they use their brain, right? So with Frank, Sudoku, absolutely. And crosswords, he loves them. So,
and anything as well where, you know, I guess the benefit of raw meaty bones is the last thing these our pets need as they get older is extra procedures that they could have avoided. They don't need a dental where they've got to put their body through an anaesthetic, but please don't not do a dental in your dog if they have dental disease. If they have dental disease, they need a dental.
Fix it.
But their body has to process that anaesthetic, doesn't it? And I've seen the odd dog over the years where an anaesthetic's kind of aged them quite a lot as they get older, but we can't leave them in pain. But if you can avoid that by preventative care through their life, amazing. Let's do that. That's, that's got to be a really good thing.
Absolutely. Any other treatments that you'd recommend?
There are. So I guess we've gone through mental enrichment, so diagnosis, mental enrichment, supplements, and then it comes to pharmaceutical drugs, doesn't it? It always comes to pharmaceutical drugs. So there's one drug in Australia that we use. I mean, I'd have numerous patients on it. It's propantofolin. I got that one right because I do say it. It's traded as the name Vivitonin. And basically what that drug does is it's thought to improve the circulation in the brain, so the blood flow, so helping the brain cells get their oxygen to function better, stopping them dying off. And again, it takes like 6 weeks to kick in. It's not the cheapest drug in the world. It's not horrendous. So you're probably talking like a cup of coffee a day. But it can really dramatically improve quality of life. The pets that have that sleep-wake issue, so at night time, so you might even consider this yourself, melatonin I'll often use. So that's still a supplement. It's not a pharmaceutical drug. I'll often give melatonin a go. I don't know if you've tried that.
He's on melatonin, yes.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Did it help or not?
I think so. Okay. So he's on, we only give it to him at night. And I have a feeling he's on maybe four milligrams, maybe two twos a night. And I think that makes a difference. Now, he still goes through that hyper period where he is very loud and vocal for, you know, quite a while. And it, you know, the thing is I've become a lot more calm with it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I've really changed the way I'm approaching that.
Yes.
And rather than, you know, coming home from work being tired and getting angry.
Yeah, I'm frustrated.
Like, I'm like, come on, buddy, it's okay. And I'll just go, if I go and pat him, he generally calms down. As soon as I leave to go do something else, he'll start up again. But I think the melatonin has helped him, and I think it does help him sleep as well.
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth a go, I think. And you don't really have a lot to lose with melatonin. It doesn't have any side effects, really.
Yeah.
Selegiline or selegiline, however you want to pronounce it, that helps your neurotransmitters, so your happy hormones, dopamine, work well because there's a lot of anxiety in these conditions. So I think if your pet is showing a lot of anxiety with the dementia, with the cognitive dysfunction, that's probably a good drug to try. Again, it is a pharmaceutical drug, but they'd be your mainstays. So selegiline and propantofolin, you have to obviously speak to your vet about them, their prescription. Between the calories, melatonin, I even give CBD oil a go. I love bringing CBD oil into the podcast. Again, I think we will find more science evidence long-term about how it's improving brain function. At the minute, the only evidence is more around symptomatic control, so anxiety, things like that. So, again, it's not cheap. We know it's not cheap. So it has to be one you're prepared to do. But, gosh, for those older dogs that have got arthritis and, you know, cognitive dysfunction, it could be a kill two birds with one stone type situation. And if you're worried that their liver and kidneys aren't functioning perfectly well, at least you don't have the side effects of other things. So definitely one to consider that can be a bit of an all-rounder. And you need a prescription from a vet for that one. So that's definitely...
Yeah, I was going to say that. Not the stuff you just get at the market. No. You get the proper stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I think especially, I mean, A, yes, I'm a vet and you have to, but also B, if you're trying to get a therapeutic effect from these products, you have to get the good stuff. That's really important. And the other thing is I actually love using essential oils with pets with cognitive dysfunction because I really find that nighttime behavior is a lot of it is anxiety based or stress based. So I actually have great response with using lavender, Roman chamomile, frankincense, things like that. So I'll diffuse. Sometimes I start going funny at like 5 or 6 in the afternoon, these dogs. So I'll often start diffusing then and keep it going for a good 2 hours. And that will just, again, take the edge off, similar to melatonin and things like that. So I've had good success. It's multimodal, trying a few things. Sometimes even I'll get pet parents to buy the sleep teas from the supermarket, steep for 15 minutes and cool, and then add that to their dinner at night because that's got chamomile and things like that. So just taking the edge off. If your pet has the stress signs associated with it, I mean, if they're house oiling and stuff, those kind of things are not really good.
No.
Anything, but if there's any stress around it, then they're really good natural things that you can try So many options, aren't there? There's really a lot of options. But you do become a carer at some point if it becomes quite advanced with cognitive dysfunction. Like if you've got these pets going to 16, 17, it's a huge impact on quality of life. And I guess I would finish because I know we're kind of winding up, but I would say my kind of message to pet parents is just be kind to yourself with a pet with cognitive dysfunction. It is really hard, and it's a really hard decision when the right time to say goodbye is. And have a good relationship with your vet, because I can guarantee you they're going to be the ones that will tell you that it's time, because you will have a lot of trouble making that decision for yourself because you'll feel like you're giving up on them, which you're not. It's a really hard work. And if and when you make that decision, book a holiday. Do not go home and spend time at home after you say goodbye, because it is really traumatic, and you will see them in you just need to get out of the house for a few days and just get some space, because you've probably lost sleep for months because they're waking you up. It's like having a newborn child, and you've cared for them. You've cared for them. Like, it's a different relationship with a pet when you have a pet with cognitive decline. So just be very kind for yourself and give yourself space to grieve when you have to say goodbye.
Oh, that's great advice, Dr. Nick. And that was, funnily enough, the exact question I was going to say to you is about self-care when caring for a pet with cognitive decline. So I think that's a lovely bow to put on this conversation, Dr. Nick. I appreciate it so much. And from a very selfish point of view, it's been incredibly informative and helpful for me. But in saying that, I'm no doubt one of many, many people who are dealing with this exact issue. And the path forward is certainly not straight. It's twisty and windy, and there are hurdles in the way, but they're the things we sign up for when we become pet owners and pet parents. And I certainly appreciate the kindness and openness with which you've given this information tonight. Thanks so much, Dr. Nick. That was awesome.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I think that everyone listening will have really appreciated you being so open, sharing your story, because it will give them the confidence and, you know, to help really deal with it for themselves and be honest with themselves. I think there'll be a lot of pet parents out there that will listen to this and go, actually, I think we're on that path a little bit. I might need to have a chat to my vet.
Yeah, and just on that, be nice to your vet, be kind to your vet. They just want to help you have a happy and healthy pet. So I want to put that in there as well. Yeah. Oh, Dr. Nick, that's okay. It's all right. I know what to do now. I'm armed with the information. And for this, I'm very, very grateful. And as always, I'm super grateful for the time that you take to have a chat with us here on Pause and Listen. It's always fun and you're always amazing, so thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure, Johnny.
Now, if you think Dr. Nick and I are worthy of a 5-star rating, get on the platform you're listening to us on and give us that 5-star rating. Dr. Nick, I think that was 5 stars tonight, don't you?
100%. I think I should get 5 stars for trying to pronounce that.
I totally agree.
I should have practiced that more before I went on there. I'm just
going to be like, that's authenticity. It's what we advertise here. It's what we commit to. It's what we provide. This is not practice. This is not our second take. This is our first and only take.
There's going to be outtakes from this one, I think.
There might be a couple. Now, if you want to find out more about my lovely guest here, Dr. Nicole Rouse, you can get on to shytiger.com, but you're on all the socials as well, Dr. Nick. Tell us where we can find you on the social networks, so to speak.
So I'm on Instagram, so Shy Tiger Health for Shy Tiger, where Montalbert Vet for Montalbert, and Dr. Nicole Rouse for Dr. Nicole. We're on Facebook at all the same. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also on TikTok at Dr. Nicole Rouse.vet, I think it is. Yeah. So fantastic. We spread ourselves across. A little bit of YouTube too these days.
You've got to cover all bases these days. You're doing a great job. And if you so you can absolutely go straight to Dr. Nick on those social handles she just mentioned. But also if you have a you know, potentially a longer or more detailed question, you can email the team at Big Dog Pet Foods, customercare@bigdogpetfoods.com. You can get on the Big Dog website, bigdogpetfoods.com, which is just a mass reference section of information about pet care as well. And subscribe to this podcast. Go on, just do it. What else? Yeah. What are you doing? Come on, don't miss an episode. Subscribe. You get a little notification that there's a new episode up. Happy days, away you go. That's it from myself and Dr. Nicole for tonight. This is a great chat about cognitive decline in pets, but now you have the information, you have the arsenal of knowledge to go out there and understand what your animal's doing and take appropriate action. And once again, thanks so much for my guest from Mont Albert Vet Surgery and founder of Shy Tiger, Dr. Nicole Rouse. Thank you for this one last time, Dr. Nick.
Good night, Johnny. Lovely to see you.
Always a pleasure. And that's it from us. If you do have a dog or a cat, make sure you give them a pat and a scratch from us. Take care. See you next time. Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. For more information and content, visit the Big Dog Pet Foods website. Please note that the information discussed in these podcasts is general in nature and has been provided in good faith for educational and informational purposes only. The information provided is not, nor is it intended to be, a substitute for professional advice or care. If any of the topics discussed raise questions or concerns for you regarding the health of your pet, we recommend that you consult your veterinarian or trusted pet health provider for an individual assessment and advice. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.